The GAA Hour with Colin Parkinson is sponsored by AIB, proudly backing club and county.
I'm not finished yet, it took me a long time to get here.
Both players have spoken with each other and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
That these fellas will get such a f***ing shell shock next Saturday evening that we put them back in their f***ing asses for f***ing 10 years.
Welcome along to the GAA Hour. This is the football show sponsored by AIB. Conan Keane are here as usual on a Monday. How's it going, lads?
Yeah, all good. All good.
Lads, the strong wind yesterday really, really helped the fact that I wasn't expecting too much from these two games because I thought they'd be cagey, dour affairs, especially Cavan and Monaghan. The strong wind helped a lot, and I'll tell you why the strong wind helped a lot. And we had a great day of football, and isn't that fantastic? Great atmospheres and great higher scoring games than we thought. Because the team playing with the strong wind feel under so much pressure to attack and have to run up a score, they're leaving gaps behind. So the counter-attack team against the wind, every team playing against the wind yesterday did well. They did well because the other team is forced. The conservative style kind of has to go out the window a little bit. They have to attack, where that might not be their natural game. So we got two brilliant games and we can thank the wind. Let's get some more gale force wind, not across the field, going right down the field into one end, so that one team is forced. They have to come and attack the game. They have to. They're with a gale force wind. You're going to need a lead and you're going to leave a few gaps at the back, and then we have fantastic games. We'll just get some sort of generated fans at the end of one side of the pitch. Blow a wind down and we'll have some great games with defensive teams.
Yeah, well, I think they're going to have to change. You know the old thing, you can't coach size. Well, you can't coach wind either, I suppose. that's the new one. It definitely, look, it impacted hugely on both of the games yesterday. Well, both of the games that we saw on TV anyway. It hugely changes the perspective and the tactics of how you have to play the game. And it does, you know, whoever has the wind in the first half thinks, geez, oh, this is a 5-point wind. You know, every win seems to be a 5-point win.
Yeah.
But definitely yesterday in the games that we saw, it was huge. Like it was easy to tap over a point from outside the 50 if you had half a yard of space.
Yeah.
Which, to
we
me,
didn't
I'd be,
see enough of that. Though,
no, I'd be quite disappointed with how both teams actually attacked with the breeze. Particularly, it seemed to me that it just wasn't spoken about that. Usually when you'd be in these scenarios, you'd be thinking, right, we need to get our good long-range shooters coming on the loop, free them up, get them half a yard and get the shot off. And in fairness to Cavan, they worked it quite well on occasions in the first half. Keane Mackey got a couple of lovely scores. They actually used the wind probably better than most.
Yeah, I don't know. We'll get to that in the analysis, because they had their best long-range point kicker, McKiernan, in a full forward.
Yeah, that was madness.
They're scratching
his
arse.
We'll come back to that.
On Drew Wiley. Like, I mean, come on. Like, with that strong wind, Garrod McKiernan has to be on the 40. He has to be able to swing those long ones. But interestingly, Conan, and this, I tweeted about this yesterday, this goes against everything teams I would have been on did right up through any team I was on. If I had any influence, you always take the wind. Mayo and Monaghan both won the toss and both elected to go against the wind. They're both favourites. What should favourites do in a game? They should put the game away. They should, because the underdogs, obviously their confidence won't be as strong as the favourites. You get this 5 or 6 point lead, you get an early goal, they scramble, and instead of it being, you know, a cagey dogfight, suddenly the game's out of reach at half time. And I couldn't believe both favourites chose to go against the wind.
I've been on teams that have done both. Like, the theory is that it's tougher, like it takes a bit longer to get into the game at the very start of it, so you're thinking if they waste 10 minutes.
But it takes longer for the team defending against the wind to get into the game too. That
yeah,
works,
but they're
works.
Happy That's enough to keep it at 0-0 or 2-2, whatever.
But
it is.
What if their defenders aren't turned on? They're not getting into the game. Suddenly you've got two goals early doors. The game could be completely over. In under 21 All-Ireland final we played against Kerry, after 5 minutes, we were 2-1 to no score down. They chose the wind. Game was over. We got it back to a point in the second half and couldn't get it back. We lost by, I think, 2 in the end. The game could be over after 10 minutes if you choose to go against the wind. If you can get up a lead as an underdog, 2 or 3 points, you've something to work on. Your speech at half time is a completely different ball game. You can go out at half time, and I've played against in Leinster finals against Westmeath, and they always beat us. They take the win, get a lead, they go down injured, they feign injury, they turn the game into an awful scrap, then the pressure's building, then fellas suddenly, because they're 3 or 4 points down, even with the win, the ball going in is panicked, there's lads taking shots from all sorts of angles, and your brain scrambles. Whereas in the first half with the win, you're more relaxed, you're calmer, you always know that at least in the second half, this is not the end of the world if we don't, you know what I mean? You can convince yourself at half time, look, we're good at running the ball against the wind anyway, this is no big deal to us. I just cannot understand why.
Yeah, well, I think it's both ways. I mean, I would be almost the opposite. I would be thinking that if I was doing it, I'd go against the wind in the first half, because purely for the fact that scores can be quite easily come by with a breeze in the second half. As teams tire, the gaps can open up, and if you do, it's all predicated on the fact that you're ahead. Do you know what I mean? Like you're thinking you're ahead and you can control the game. Like you get a good start in the game. If you get a good start against the wind, you keep the score down. You get a goal against a heavy wind like that. That's crucial. If you're a team that's capable of scoring goals, you're thinking, right, we play against the breeze. If we get two goals, the game is over. We have the game won. If we get one, we're in with a great chance. Second half, game loosens out. If you have a good free taker, you're thinking, right, he can kick anything almost inside 50 metres, you can slow the tempo of the game down, control the game. Very, very hard for a team to break up the field against you. You know, but again, it's all about being ahead. Every single thing is about, if you're ahead in the game, you can control the tempo of the match, whether you have the win or you don't have the win. So.
Yeah. Well, we obviously have two examples here. But yeah. My argument is favourites should always go with the win. They should always go with the win.
I would probably agree with that, yeah.
And put that team away.
Absolutely,
put them away.
Don't give them hope.
Give them no hope. Because all you want is one of these smaller country teams or smaller counties to get a 3 or 4 point lead on you. And they're in the dressing room thinking they can beat you then. Whereas before the game, they might not have thought that at all. Yeah. You know what I mean? Now, we obviously have... this is not a perfect science. I'm just talking in general. Obviously, we have an example of Monaghan choosing to go against the wind and it working out for them. And you have an example of Mayo choosing to go against the wind and it not working out for them. You can make arguments for both sides. My argument for the favourites should always go with it.
Yeah, and the thing about it is, I'd say after 15 minutes, Mayo would have been...
delighted.
Thinking, this is brilliant. We're after getting our goal against the wind. We're in a good position here. And then Keith Higgins... does what he does, and that changes the whole game.
And little do we know that Mayo had no plan at all to use the wind. They just wanted to keep running the ball anyway. They didn't try any shots from long, apart from breaking it.
No, it's true. We'll definitely get into that as well.
Sorry, my last point about going against the wind, what Keane was saying, the big risk is the wind could bloody dive by the second half.
It can go up as well. It can rise as well. You know, like, I mean, there's no. All I think there is a right or wrong answer. I definitely think favourites. I don't want to say it again, but like this thing that you score a goal, it's great. You don't score a goal, it's not great. You can make that argument that if you score a goal against the wind, it's great, but you can also make the argument that if you concede a goal with the wind.
Yeah, well, I think I don't know if any of you read any of the Jack Reacher books. Well, Jack Reacher always says eat while you can, so I think when the wind is there, take the advantage while you can.
There you go, exactly, because there's a bigger chance. Well, it depends. In Salt Hill there's always a wind anyways. Keith Higgins, lads, we're not even going to get into that because Keith Higgins deserved to get sent off. He got the line. I was actually funny enough looking at the replay of that, and I was trying to see his hands.
Yeah, so was I.
And I was thinking, he's been hard done by. Yeah, he's been really hard done by here. There's nothing in this. Then I thought that Comer is playing acting, and I went, that's not like Comer, what's happened here? Next minute you see the knee and you go, right, might have been out of character but completely out of order as well. There's no doubt about with Keith Higgins, but I want to talk about the Flynn Blackheart, because I think most people looking at that, and Spillane and Whelan got it right at half time, is that Killian O'Connor completely sewed him up. He knew what he was doing. This is a problem with the Blackheart. You can actually stitch players up and get them Blackhearts. Killian O'Connor ran into him and fell on the ground with a big roar. And Killian knew exactly what he was doing. I felt really bad for Flynn, who did nothing really, only stand his ground. And if anything, tried to kind of put his hands up as in, I see what O'Connor's doing here.
I think Flynn, in fairness to him, initially he was trying to block O'Connor off, and Killian O'Connor absolutely just took every advantage he could out of it. He was accelerating across. He actually, as soon as he saw Flynn moving towards him and kind of lining him up, O'Connor actually ran into it even harder. And then Flynn kind of knew, oh no, he has me now, and he had to at the last second kind of pretend, he plead his innocence. Killian O'Connor is just a master craftsman at this sort of stuff. He's unbelievable. He's the best man I've ever seen to get frees moved up as well, Every time he wins a free, he's at this pretending he wants to take the free short and giving out to the ref, and ref brings it up. Unbelievable. Like, he's just a genius when it comes to this sort of stuff.
Like, you could clearly see him get Garrett Bradshaw a yellow only about 10 minutes previously. He slapped him in the side of the face. He was in his face. He was tormenting Bradshaw. Bradshaw, like an idiot, then just pushes him in the chest. He falls back over, but actually doesn't blatantly fall back over. This is how clever Killian O'Connor is. Falls back over and gets straight back up to his feet. You know, like, I'm not making a big deal out of this. And then Bradshaw gets the yellow. So, like, I mean, Killian O'Connor is totally into that. Now, there's no doubt he's into that, but there's also a clip the owner of the company, Niall McGarry, put out there where Killian O'Connor was getting dog's treatment over the sideline and didn't react at all. So Killian knows how to wind lads up to react, but he also knows not to react to the provocation himself.
He has brilliant discipline. Yeah. He does have incredibly good discipline. I think he's a brilliant example to lads out there who do tend to lose their cool. He takes all sorts of guff all the time.
Yeah.
He takes dirty belts. And he's a great bit of stuff. Like, he battled really, really hard yesterday.
But he gives it though as well.
But he's brilliant. He's very, very clever at taking the advantage whenever he can.
Are we being a bit too positive for what he did? Like, is he essentially gonna get a black card?
I think Flynn was looking to check him, and Killian O'Connor knew that he was going to be blocked off and made the most of it. Loads of times that happens in a game where a lad steps across you, and he does block your momentum. He stops you from getting the tackle on, but it's not enough for the referee to do anything about it. Killian O'Connor just, to my mind, brought it to the referee's attention.
Yeah, I don't know. I just
it was
like
quite theatrical, but Flynn knew what he was up to.
Yeah, no, it was. I think Flynn saw him coming, and in Flynn's head was, I'm going to hit him here. But then Flynn saw how it was developing and tried to pull out of it. But Connor sawed him up. O'Connor pretty much cheated. Like, he did cheat. There's no doubt he. Did he cheat?
He was just cleverer than Flynn in that scenario.
He got him the black card. And, like, I mean, what do you say in a scenario like that? Like, I mean, I'm sure his teammates would be delighted with him. It wasn't good to see it. What I would be concerned about is that everybody that has ever played the game knew what O'Connor and Flynn, what that situation. McQuillan didn't, and that's what I would be very concerned about. Like, how did he not know what transpired there?
To be honest, McQuillan should have just said play on and get on with it. Like, it was both of them acting up a bit. To me, look, Flynn was the instigator in that scenario, and that he put his body in the way. He moved. If you watch it again, ball has been picked up. He turns and he looks at Killian O'Connor and he moves in that direction. And Killian O'Connor takes every advantage to show that to the referee to get a free in.
Yeah, but Flynn didn't move towards him for the last three or four steps. Flynn just kind of stayed his ground.
The danger of playing like that. Do you remember the All-Ireland final last year where he kept dragging John Small back on top of him? And he kept taking his hand off, very clever, and he would put his arm around his neck again and then take it off, and then John Small swings out at his arm. You could get a player sent off for that then, and then all of a sudden we'd be up in arms.
I'm not really condoning it. It's just an analysis of the incident where they were both at it, and Killian O'Connor is very clever. We don't like to see it. We'd prefer if they were both copped on and just got on with the game.
Yeah, and if anything, the Bradshaw incident was worse, and that won't get half as much. Like, he wound Bradshaw up to reacting. But then again, I'm sure Killian knows the other side of it, and he's constantly getting it and he doesn't react. So he's probably thinking, if they're stupid enough to react to what I'm not stupid enough to react to, well, then they're going to get their yellow, and maybe that's the way he works. One other thing, or a couple of other things here, lads, because there's a lot to get through. This really bothered me when I saw it, and it was a free in the second half against Killian O'Connor. He seems to be the team at the top of the show, and it was a free out for throwing the ball. Now, you see the replay. Killian O'Connor is being swarmed by two or three lads, and he tries to hand pass it out of the ruck. His hand gets hooked, right? And it's like a hook in hurling, which is completely legal in hurling. It's a brilliant skill of the game. This was something that pissed me off no end when I was playing, is your hand getting hooked as you're hand passing the ball, and the ball ends up falling out of your holding hand and you get a free against you. And you're like, that is a free for me. So I text Pat McEnany last night just to make sure about this, and I says, Pat, is it a free if your hand is hooked with your striking hand? And he said, it is a free. That's a free. That was the most blatant free for Killian O'Connor I've ever seen. Why would he choose to throw it there while his other hand was being hooked? Like, why would you throw it? Yeah. He wouldn't throw it with one hand. It made no sense to throw it with one hand.
Exactly, yeah. Like, he hand passes with his left hand. He has it in his right hand. His arm is back. He's trying to give it off, and it gets hand. And as he's falling, the ball nearly gets... You know,
it's going to fall out of your holding hand because that's
now, in fairness, Killian was probably clever enough as he got his hand kind of hooked. He kind of did release it in a little bit of a throw, but look, what could he do? I would have given, I thought it was a free in as well. I thought it was quite obvious, and Joe McQuillan was in a good position. I don't know how he didn't see it.
No, and you just don't get enough frees for that kind of thing. I'm not sure if referees are wise to it, but there's a lot of frees that are given as throws that are not throws.
What's worse is when you actually do the hurling hand pass, because you're being so honest, one of your hands is getting held, yeah. You throw it up and hit it with the same hand and you still get a free against you because the ref thinks he spotted something that he obviously hasn't.
Would you believe, I think that's what happened, that's what Killian tried to do, and that may be what kind of got him the free against him, by actually trying to be, okay, my hand's hooked, I'm going to tink on my feet and throw it up and hand pass it, maybe, I don't know. But I just wanted to point that out because I see it a lot in the game, and I see the players that are being fouled get a free given against him. Paul Kerrigan, lads, was on Cork Radio and he was given out after the game. I think Paul Kerrigan should be keeping his head down personally with the way Cork are playing at the moment, but he was given out about Kerry and he says Kerry have a monopoly on sports writing on the telly. He was on the Big Red Bench and he says it suits them to criticise us. So I presume he's having a shot at Tomás O'Shea. Well, the three O'Sheas are in print media, are in TV as well.
A club mate of his.
They are actually, yeah, they're clubmates, which might be interesting. But what on earth are the Kerry lads saying that isn't the truth? Like, if the Kerry lads were coming out criticising Cork when most of the other sports writers and pundits were saying Cork are playing really well, you might have an argument saying, oh, there's a bit of a, you know, they've got it in for us. That's the rivalry. Cork are a shambles, Paul. It's not the Kerry pundits and sports writers that are criticising Cork. It's every sports writer that has any bit of cop on and knows anything about football. It's deplorable stuff out of Cork. They're going to get hammered against Kerry in the Munster final. You'd be amazed if they're not. They can only score a point after 40 minutes against Tip, and then they rallied grand. They're barely struggling over Waterford. You're there. You're going to get criticised, Paul, when you're playing to that level and you're Cork. That's the reality of it. It's not a Kerry-Cork thing.
Are they in a nice position going into the final?
They're in the long grass. Yeah, they're in the long grass. Yeah.
There's no pressure on them. And like the way they changed the game in the second half, let's just go at them because we're doing nothing here. Maybe they'll just go out against Kerry and play. And you know, like in any day, especially Kerry and Cork, anything could happen.
No. Based on the evidence of what we've seen in the last two games, Kerry are going to give them a licking.
Cork are massively underperforming. But look, nobody likes criticism. So Cork have had a good win, or they've had, they've won a tight game under a lot of pressure. They've got the release of that, and I suppose he's getting a few things off his chest because he's a bit pissed off about the criticism they've had. Nobody likes criticism, but I think they're just observations from outside that Cork should be doing a lot better.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. Right, Dear McConnelly, lads, quick before we move on into some analysis. It looks like he's appealing his ban now, which is incredibly frustrating, and we've Joe Brawley kind of ringleading this. He's writing in The Independent about how the referees should have dealt with it and all this kind of stuff, right? We talked about this last Monday on the show. I was going to tweet last week and give Dear McConnelly an awful lot of credit for accepting his ban like a man. Because let's be honest, regardless of what anybody says, it was a minor physical interference with the referee and the punishment is 3 months. Now, you can argue all you want about that punishment being a little bit severe and it didn't fit the crime. And I would say it doesn't fit the crime. Maybe a month or something is fine. But the reality is, that's the rule. Like, I mean, the talk that he was provoked the whole game. I was at the game. He was being man-marked the whole game. He wasn't being provoked or targeted or assaulted off the ball. He wasn't. What happened in the incident in front of the linesman was Connolly wouldn't give the Carlow lads the ball. You see that in 100 different games. Now, they were rough with him, trying to get the ball back. But Connolly knew what he was doing holding the ball in that situation, right? Then he pushes the linesman. I'd say the linesman just froze, didn't deal with it the way he should have. That's their fault. But then you have Joe Brawley, and he's... like, Connolly's clearly guilty, because there's no doubt, and I'm sure in his defence he'll say, I'm guilty or whatever. But so he's going to get off this, potentially, because Joe Brawley's talking about technicalities and all this kind of... If that's the road we're going down, what good is any sort of rules or any sort of punishments or anything like that? If Joe Brawley can say that I'm going to get you off on a technicality, it's like someone goes in, murders somebody, and there's a technical fault in the case, so the lawyer gets the murderer off with murder because there's a technicality. Like, what kind of a person is that defending lawyer, as far as I'm concerned, that will get a murderer off, and maybe the law says, yeah, that's grand. I'm not comparing Dermot Connolly to
we do not believe Dermot Connolly is involved in any of this.
Yeah.
That's a weird analogy, but what I'm saying is Dermot Connolly is guilty and there should be no technicalities used to get Dermot Connolly off this suspension. Like, I mean, he'll be back for an All-Ireland semi-final. He has to learn his lesson at some stage. I interviewed him last year. He told me that he's talking to somebody about his temper, that he's trying to get it under control. And then you've Brawley comparing the situation to the Gooch. If the Gooch did this. But like Joe would surely know as being a barrister that previous convictions are going to have an impact on the way a case is perceived in the media and the way a case is dealt with. Like, I mean, he got the minimum ban here, the 3 months. Gooch has an exemplary record. If that happened, Gooch, the media probably wouldn't highlight it as much. But that's because he doesn't normally do it. Connolly has a track record of this. So yeah, of course he's going to be dealt with a little bit differently. So the culture and the attitude of getting players off, I think it's just wrong. We saw John Milan years ago for Cork accept his punishment like a man and get on with it. Sometimes I think you should just do that.
Yeah, and if you want to talk about technicalities, I mean, like this ban was accepted. So they've admitted, yeah, it's wrong. And now all of a sudden it's being appealed again. Like, so this is the law. It's not very just. Like, you know, I wrote a piece about it during the week. It's like, well, everyone's accepting that Jamie Connolly, what he did is wrong, it was against the rules, deserved 12 weeks if that's what the punishment is, but no one's talking about that anymore. My argument would be, could we not just in a real fair world deal with Jeremy Connolly, say you've done that, you shouldn't have done it, you've more or less admitted you've done it, and then we'll deal with the linesman and the referee who actually didn't take appropriate action, we'll deal with that separately then. I mean, Joe Brawley's saying that this is a point of, you know, this is a point of the disciplinary system and we need to make sure that this is fair and right. But how is it fair if somebody's getting away with pushing an official? Like, as I said last week, it's not a natural reaction. And then the point with Gooch, Joe Brawley actually said, if this was Gooch, we would just say, I was a bit frustrated that he was manhandled. Well, that's end of discussion, because that's him almost agreeing as well that Connolly was frustrated and Connolly went over and laid a hand on him in frustration. So I don't know what we're talking about. He's guilty, deal with that. If you think the linesman referee did something wrong, deal with that separately. But there's evidence that Connolly pushed him. There's nothing to talk about.
Yeah, and Connolly's gone down this road before where he got back for a replay against Mayo after getting, wasn't it a red he got for something on
against
Lee Keegan?
Lee Keegan punched him.
And he got off it. Like, I mean, why are people appealing obvious suspensions? Like, I mean, what road are we going down? And what's the point of suspensions? And actually, it did Connolly no good that day because he was poor in the replay. His head was all over the place. He spent most of the week in different hearings and court proceedings.
It was five in the morning that morning that he got
five in the morning.
Off.
And now he's going to go through that whole process again for something that's on video. Like, there's no black and white about this. He pushed a linesman. Now, you can talk about the frustration all you want and make a case about the frustration, but he's going to get off on a technicality that the referee didn't deal with it at the time. Like, that's not in the spirit. And Joe Brawley talks about us being a community-based organisation and the spirit of the game. And, you know, if you're in the spirit of the game, you accept the punishment that's been given to you. You don't try and get off on a technicality.
Yeah, well, look, Joe Brawley says an awful lot of things and he contradicts himself more often than most, I would say. Look, the reason people appeal these things is because they get them overturned. I mean, it's as simple as that.
Well, yeah, okay.
I mean, like, let's
move on.
Let's be honest about it. Like, they're appealing because they want Connolly playing for them, and if they feel there's an avenue to get him off, they'll use it to get him off. And we're foolish to think that we all wouldn't do the same thing in that scenario. If we felt one of our teammates could get off a suspension, we'd be saying, get the appeal in. Let's try and get him off. Let's see what it is.
So the thing here is right. Probably not a criticism of Dublin, because I agree with that 100%. But that avenue should not be there.
Well, I think everybody has the right to appeal. It's just that on this particular scenario, I don't know how he could get off. Really, to be honest. So I don't know what the basis of the appeal would be. I mean, somebody. Look, I'm sure there's something there. But one of the things on it which surprised me is that, I mean, why was that issue not dealt with immediately on the field?
Well, I'd
by
say
the officials.
To be honest with you,
what's your theory on poor officiating?
Number one, and number two, a flashpoint. And I would say maybe that linesman, that never happened to him before. I would say just panic stations set in, and it was a poor decision, like any other refereeing decision. It was in the heat of the moment, and you know he didn't do it. But my point about this is that, like, if Connolly is unsuccessful with this appeal, he should get a year. Like, there should be, if you're going to appeal this.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Do you know what I mean?
Not
there
a
has
year,
to, there okay, I'm just saying, there has to be the threat that if your appeal is not successful, that
yeah,
you could get
your
a
suspension
length,
is doubled
yeah,
or something.
So
yeah,
because there's too many of them running to this avenue, Keenan, and I agree with you. Of course, you'll encourage your teammate to go that avenue if you get off, but you also should have the.
But only if he has the bloody right to do it. I mean, like, we've all been involved in things where, you know, somebody gets sent off in your team and they have a suspension and it's just served and that's just that. I mean, appeals are reserved for where the punishment didn't fit the crime. You know, the wrong fella got sent off,
yeah,
or something.
Like the Fitzpatrick lad up there. Now, okay, it turns out that I'd say he did do it in the end, but it was unclear, and they were appealing it because they're saying it wasn't out there.
I don't want to talk about that one because how the chap could have forgotten that he was involved in it. Listen, I'm not.
That was madness.
Yeah,
but
you get my
point. This is black and white. This is an appeal on a technicality. This is not like we want to appeal because we think our player didn't do it. Like what you're saying.
Yes. Yeah. I think that on this particular, solely on this incident with Connolly, I think an appeal just shows everybody in kind of a bad light, in my view. And I really don't honestly see what the appeal could be based on, to be honest.
I think it's that the referees didn't adjudicate. This is what Brawley's trying to say, and Brawley's not helping the situation here at all. Like, I mean, if he wants to bring in this culture of, you know, bringing that culture of, I don't know, this
manliness, you always,
but yeah,
you
but the culture of appeals and all that kind of thing, and talk about technicalities, that's not the spirit of what we're talking about here.
No,
and it's unfortunate if that's going to be encouraged, and he's encouraging
but
it.
You could argue he has a vested interest in the whole thing anyway, really. And look, he this is what he does. He provides debate, we'll call it. He generally goes against the common beliefs anyway, so look, I think if he's dictating the terms of engagement on this one, then we should all be slightly worried.
Yeah, well, it'll be interesting to see how that turns out. All right, we've gone way over there. We'll be back in a second with some talk about the matches. Derek, great to finally get to interview you.
Yeah? Oh, really, yeah.
Why
is it great?
Why do you not do many interviews?
I don't know, really. I wasn't being asked to do a whole pile of...
Really?
Yeah. Have you ever rang me? I know we spoke about the defensive side of things. If you're coming in and you want to be, if you want to be the Woolly Parkinson and just play for myself, and an inter-county corner forward isn't just patching the side either. Unfortunately for you, Woolly, it won't last forever. You can ask ex-players that. You can ask you know that yourself, Woolly.
Yeah, mine never started at
all.
Yeah,
well, that's neither here nor there.
AIB, backing club and county.
Some interesting comments from Kevin Walsh after the game, lads. He says, this is not about having to beat Mayo at all costs. The game was never going to define our season. This time last year it would have. All the eggs were in one basket last year. We've set certain targets for us, and this was another game along the way towards our target. So, like, I mean, it was interesting to say how much pressure they put on beating Mayo and breaking their dominance last year, whereas this year I reckon their targets as an All-Ireland semi-final is to go one better than last year, and whether to beat Mayo or whether to go through the back door to achieve that is, you know, it's not the end of the world for them. So there was less pressure on them this time. But, like, I mean, what's the analysis here of Galway? Because I want to stick with Galway first because they won the game. Are they at the top table? I've made some comments here about Galway lads and an All-Ireland in 3 years, and I was laughed at. They've now beaten Mayo twice. Last year we said they completely shocked them.
When did the 3 years start, just as a matter of interest?
This year. So this year and two more years to win an All-Ireland, right? So it's not as outlandish now, lads.
I don't think it would have changed anything if it had been next year.
If you only stuck with me when I said this back in February, then listen. But, like, I mean, our Galway, like, I think the first half showed their full back line is bloody there for the taking, and I don't think they've improved their full back line. I think Kyne isn't great, but, like, they need a full time sweeper to sit in front of that full back line, because they didn't have it yesterday in the first half. They had it when Higgins got sent off. You're laughing, Keane. Why is that?
I'm laughing at you because you want Galway to play this attacking football.
No, you're wrong there now. You can play a sweeper and have five forwards, lads. Come on now. Let's not go crazy.
But maybe
crazy
does that show why Kevin Walsh was so reluctant maybe to just always open up? He wanted a bit more protection in front of his back line, and maybe he didn't rate Mayo that much in the forward lane, that he thought, let's just push up on them a little bit more.
Yeah, there was a difference in Galway yesterday in how they approached the game. I thought, look, it could have been to do with the weather conditions.
The weather.
Yeah,
you have
it could
to
have been to do
it
with the weather conditions. But I suppose back to it, are Galway serious contenders? I don't think they are. I think they clung on in the end there against a 14-man Mayo who didn't play to their potential whatsoever, and who were, for whatever reason, I don't know why Colin Boyle wasn't starting the game. Aidan O'Shea should be in the team. Andy Moran was taken off when he shouldn't have been taken off. Kevin McLaughlin was taken off. Strange. I think the Mayo management have more questions to answer out of the game than most. I think Galway have certainly improved. Their physical conditioning seems to be much better in terms of their strength. Do they have the fitness to last the full 70 against one of the top teams? They really clung on in the end there.
Yeah, they clung on because they were playing against the Storm, Keane, and they were playing against team that are the
conditions
top three.
The conditions were the same for both teams, and Mayo were the team coming stronger at the end.
Yeah, because they had the Gale with them, of course, and it's natural just to sit back. They had 4-point lead coming into the last 10 minutes. They're playing against a top three team who Dublin struggled to beat last year. The top three team has a Gale force win behind them. I'd be less critical to say, of course you're going to cling on
My view is that Galway currently are a 60-minute team against top-class opposition. Now, let's not forget they have... Next season they will have the benefit of a full Division 1 campaign under their belt, so that will I think move them on to the next level. At the minute I just don't think they're ready, but they're showing massive signs of improvement from last season. There's no doubt about it that... You know, you could very well be right. They could be knocking on the door in the next couple of seasons based on the progression they've made in the last year.
Yeah, they actually won Galway without being overly impressive. Like, in the first half, they stuttered. Arguably their most impressive period came 10 minutes after half-time where they turned a screw and got got three in a row, which nearly buried Mayo, you know, and they ran through the middle. Brannigan made an impact. I think for the reason when you're beating Mayo... And you're not overly impressive. You know, I think Galway are definitely just starting to come to that top table.
Yeah, I agree with you in a sense that, of course, they're hanging on at the end, but sometimes there are games where, like, I don't think Galway won as much as Mayo lost. Like, I think the Keith Higgins sending off obviously didn't help. Keane Mason there, Boyle only got about 5 minutes, did he, Colin Boyle?
Yes.
By the time he got on, like, what was that about? I heard Aidan O'Shea, now, in fairness, only had 20 minutes in him, whatever. Sort of injury.
It was a groin injury, they said, in RTE.
Yeah, but bringing off McLaughlin and Andy Moran, like, I don't care what age Andy Moran is, how much legs you think you need, just after he kicks an unbelievable score, let that man go after the next ball, at least. Like, you know, he's going to have his tail up, he's going to be enthused by just what he's done.
But even if he can't run away from anybody, he's still going to win the ball in front, and he's going to pose questions, and he'd probably win
and
you a free.
He changed the shape then when he went off, like, or they changed the shape because there's no outlet there in the forward.
That's a very good point. And we know that Mayo's game plan, to a fault, revolves around Andy Moran and him breaking. And in the first half, they really popped the ball in front of them. Jeez, Andy and Killian O'Connor were linking up brilliantly with some lovely cross-through balls. And Mayo just looked like, right, this is a sophisticated, clever, streetwise team playing against the wind, and they have Galway here. There was no doubt in my mind. Now, I completely agree, taking Andy Moran off with the wind, when you actually want to use the wind to get Andy Moran out in front. Yeah. Andy Moran, I agree, his problem is now when he gets out in front, he has to lay it off because he can't actually go past the man at all anymore. Killian O'Connor can't. That's another problem with Mayo. They don't have that danger. But, like, I mean, when Andy went off, they had no focal point up front. I never saw a team play more cluelessly with a wind in all my life. They threw in Kirby, they never really do that. Kirby was running around like a headless chicken and he was getting no ball. So they neither ran the ball through midfield or gave the ball in. Andy Moran, their focal point wasn't there. They were absolutely all over the place in the playing with the wind.
And Kevin McLaughlin as well. He's generally a very good link player, in fairness to him. So he was a loss at the very end of the game
a lot.
He did. In fairness to him, but
yeah, would have brought him out around the midfield rather than get him
carrying the ball. Look, as well, like, Mayo had two balls cleared off the, I know it's the same incident, but Mayo had a ball cleared off the line. I mean, the Galway goalkeeper didn't have the greatest of games yesterday, and he would be a worry for them, I'd imagine, going forward.
Yeah, and their full back line, but I genuinely think a full time sweeper in front of that full back line, at least it'll cut out that initial ball. At least teams will look up and they won't be able to take those lads to the cleaners as well. They need a bit of height in there too. But on Mayo, and I mean, this is gas about Mayo. Rotcher took over Mayo and the criticism with Mayo was, oh, they're a bit open at the back. So he played a sweeper with Mayo. Grand. Now they've abandoned the sweeper. What Mayo have lost, in my opinion, is the scoring threat from their half-back line and midfield. This abandon, this playing with abandon and breaking forward. Now, I know Durkin gets the odd few scores. Keegan was irrelevant going forward the other day. Maybe their biggest weapon at going forward. Donal Vaughan did a little bit. They said they started him over Boyle for a tactical reason. Maybe it was to go forward a little bit more.
Yeah, I thought midfield, he had a very good game.
Yeah, he did play well. Midfield, they've no real scoring threat from midfield. So what used to work so well for James Horan, and because Mayo don't have this brilliant forward line that other teams do, Mayo used to get their scores from their half-back line. They'd chip in for a few from midfield. Their half-forward line would get it. They didn't need this lethal full forward line. But now that when the scores dry up from the Mayo half-back line and midfield, suddenly you're dependent on this full forward line. It isn't going to shoot the lights out from play. And so they're complete. They're almost like they're hamstringing themselves. Like, I mean, go back to what makes Mayo good, where they'll attack you from everywhere. And they're not dependent on a forward line that isn't probably in the top three. Their 1-9 is in the top, maybe one. But their forward line isn't in the top three. But now their forward line has this spotlight on them because they've gone a little bit more. They're trying to tighten it up at the back, whatever
and,
that means.
And on that point as well, could you imagine how poor the Dublin forward line would look if their half back line never crossed the halfway line?
Yeah.
We'd be saying the same about Dublin. Oh, they've no forwards, they can't do anything.
Yeah.
Because they don't have players breaking forward and creating the overlap. I totally agree with you. Mayo have gone far too conservative. And when that happens with a team, when their natural game is to be sort of gung-ho and drive forward and stuff like that, yeah, fair enough, they were caught on a couple of occasions. But they've maybe gone a little bit too far the other way, and now they have this conservatism in their game, which is actually hindering them a bit.
I think so.
And if you look at the personnel that were brilliant breaking forward, Keegan was brilliant. Donal Vaughan was brilliant at these late runs, and then they've in the last couple of seasons they've added Durkin in as well, who's top class. If they had those three guys still breaking forward, you still leaves you with the likes of Boyle, Higgins, Barrett at the back, you know, who are quality defenders. You know, they can still attack. Parsons and Shamie O'Shea in midfield don't kill themselves going forward. You know, they have enough defensive cover most of the time in their matches. They should be encouraged to break forward a little bit more. And look, we've spoken, it's a bugbear of mine, Keegan at centre half back,
yeah,
that's not working. It's clearly not working. Now, he had his hands full with Shane Walsh,
listen,
and anyone would
did.
He got roasted up
but,
by
but
Walsh.
The best approach he could have had with Shane Walsh was running him the other way,
yeah,
putting him on the back foot.
The big problem was that when Keegan was running a space in the last 10 minutes, it wasn't like he was coming onto the play. It was like a bad club team looking at the county player going, go and do something for us, and they wanted him just to carry the ball the whole way up the pitch, and nobody was helping him. It was like, let's see how far Keegan gets here and then we'll maybe do something. But nobody moved. They played him every single ball space at the end. He ran and eventually had to turn back, and
yeah,
so you lost the Keegan effect as well.
He was on the outside of the cover, you see. He was getting the ball on the outside of the cover. There was no breaking the lines with Mayo. There was nothing that you would be used to them from, like, because see, I'd put Vaughan and Keegan in a similar category of coming late onto play. I wouldn't put Durkin. Durkin's really accurate for a wing back. I'd have him in a different
Durkin's
category.
Durkin's a more natural footballer, probably.
Yeah, but he's not the runner the two lads are. So, like, this running game Mayo had of running from deep and coming onto ball and excitement wasn't to be seen yesterday anyways, you know. Like, Vaughan played all right, but, like, I mean, like you'd say, Keegan, Boyle always was good for getting up and getting a score, yeah, off the outside of his boot.
It's going to be very interesting because they do have... is it 3 weeks until they have their qualifier match, Mayo?
Yeah, 3 weeks.
Three weeks. I think it's going to be really, really interesting to see what happens now, because Mayo have shown over the last number of seasons that they have big personalities and big leaders in that group. And it's going to be interesting to see what happens. Do those guys now have the hunger to drive it themselves? Or are they going to allow the manager to tell them what to do? And there is a big difference there, because previously they would have said, got themselves together as a group of players, and they had that drive and they knew what they were going to do. They knew what they wanted to do as a team. They knew what worked for them. They knew what way they wanted to play, and that was going to be it. And that was a legacy of the Horan era, where they were such a consistent, strong team. What will happen now? Will they still have the confidence to do that? Aidan O'Shea is, I would have, from the outside looking in, he would appear to be one of their leaders in their group.
But he played well when he came on,
and he did, but you know, he doesn't seem to be flavour of the month with the manager. We don't know. Is it injuries? He was
Marty,
late coming back into the fold with them this season.
Sorry, Marty Morrissey said in the commentary that he's not playing because he had a groin injury. He said that's what they were being told. So, you know. Yeah.
So look, it's interesting. Maybe there's nothing in it. maybe there is. It's just an interesting one for both Rochford and that group, because it's pivotal. Obviously, it's, look, goes without saying, it's a pivotal moment in their season, but it can go two ways. Like, it can be the manager kind of dictating, right lads, this is the way we're going to play, this is how we're going to get out of this, we're going to follow this format, or it can be the players driving what they want to do and how they want to close out the season. And if they can, if over the next 3 weeks they're able to marry the two of those, and the players still have that hunger, yeah, then they're definitely going to have the say in the latter stages of the championship. If the players don't have that drive, and we don't know, like, you honestly can't say that, this could be a massive hammer blow to them. They've been on the go a long, long time. So it's a pivotal moment, and it'll be very, very interesting to see their performance in 3 weeks' time. I would not like to be playing them, by the way.
No, although they lost last year and they struggled to get back into it. They were steeped with the draw they got. They got two home draws, very winnable ones, and then they got Westmeath in a quarter in Croke Park.
The reality is, whoever's playing them is off a loss as well. And if you were coming into the qualifiers,
you obviously don't want to play Mayo. Yeah. But I think this will have hurt them a lot. And then you have Rochford saying after the game, "Oh, we played the game for 50 minutes against the Connacht champions with 14 men." Technically, that's all right, but hang on, Galway are Connacht champions, but Mayo are the big dogs, yeah, in Connacht. So don't start twisting it there now, Stephen. And another thing, you played 50 minutes with 14 men, but that's not telling the full picture. You only played 9 minutes. With the wind, or against the wind, rather. Most of that 50 minutes was played, 41 of that 50 minutes was played with a gale force wind in your back. So, like, I mean, it's not like as it seems. Like, that's a nice spin to put on it, but that's not the reality of it here.
That quote about the Connacht champions is almost like David Moyes talking about United aspiring to be like Man City. I mean, that's not on if you're Mayo and you're one of the best teams in Ireland. But, like, where, you know, you're talking about that one, where was the like of Shane Nally yesterday? He sat on the bench the whole game, brilliant league campaign.
He's just back from injury now.
Big,
he got injured.
Foot. Like, he could have been very handy coming on there and hitting a couple of big scores over. It didn't look to be any. Not even reactionary plan on the bench, thinking, right, let's get someone on who could hit a 50-yard score for us at least, because that was, what, 30 yards in reality with that big wind?
Yeah, no, I think that's what they were lacking. And I think, geez, it always seems to be the same with Mayo. Whenever they play Dublin, you'll have Paddy Andrews, you have Bernard Brogan, and they'll be getting these good points from play. And the same in the first half, Shane Walsh, Heaney, got these, Garrett Bradshaw, all got nice long-range points, or Walsh burst through the defence and got a lovely individual one. Mayo always struggle for their scores. Do you know what I mean? They're working that little bit harder all the time. They don't get these handy ones. Do you know where, right, okay, I'm wrecked, I'm just going to give it to Shane Walsh. He's a speed demon. He's just going to, you know, he'll do something. Yeah. Damien Comer, who deserves a huge amount of credit, lads. He's a beast of a man. We talked to him on the show. He got two great points from play. His head never dropped. A few bad wides in the first half, maybe should have calmed down and maybe thrown one or two off and shot once or twice. He's fearless. Like, I mean, they don't have an out ball even to say, let's give it to a Comer and he'll do. Like, all good teams have these lads where you go, just get it to him, I'm wrecked. Do you know that kind of way? And you've lads you trust that can make something out of nothing, and Kerry have them, Dublin have them. Mayo don't have them. They have to work really hard as a team to get their scores.
Yeah, like Caelan O'Connor is their go-to man, and because he's playing in the inside line, I suppose, it's very, very hard for the rest of the team to get him the ball.
Yeah.
And in fairness to him, he does everything he can. Andy Moran, I suppose, is the big go-to man. He wasn't on the field.
Yeah, and that's it. And that's the disappointment. Killian played well. He battled hard in the second half. He got one great one from play. That was a lovely ball in front of him.
Yeah.
And you wonder why Mayo just didn't do more of that. It just didn't make any sense. I don't know. I think Mayo will be absolutely, like, they're obviously going to be incredibly disappointed after that. But I think they're, I don't know. I don't, obviously, you're not going to write Mayo off on one performance, but I'm looking through that team and I'm looking at Boland, meh, he's all right. I'm looking at Cohen in the half forward line, I wouldn't agree with it at all. You're looking at the full forward line, McLaughlin, O'Connor, and Moore, and that's grand. O'Shea and Parsons, if they're not, you know, they're workman like without being, like, I don't know, outstanding. And Mayo are persistent even with short kickouts, even with them two in. I'd like to see some scoring threat from that midfield. Put someone in. If it's Donald Vaughan, that's better. At least he's a bit more dynamic than Seamus O'Shea and Parsons. Or Aidan O'Shea is a huge loss to that midfield. Play Aidan O'Shea midfield. I mean, they have a couple of lads that aren't right. But that team was all wrong. And the changes they made during the game was all wrong. Yeah, and the team that ended on the field was all wrong.
And I don't think they're getting anything out of Dermot O'Connor at centre forward either. Doesn't seem to be, from what I've seen of him in that position, he doesn't seem to be half as effective as he is when he plays wing forward.
Yeah, and if
he has maybe more freedom when he's wing forward, he can drop deep and he's maybe you know, he's not being marked as tight as he is at 11. He seems to have more of an influence on the game for the team. I'd like to, from Mayo's perspective, I'd like to see Aidan O'Shea back out there at 11, and you know, get him motoring around the field and on the ball and having an influence in that middle third.
Yeah, no, that was a great, and we need to give Sean Armstrong a shout out. He was absolutely outstanding from the freeze off the ground. Just beautiful,
absolutely magnificent.
Missed one or two in the towards the end. Maybe his legs were getting a bit tired, but him and Comer inside. On their own, I really like the look of the Galway team. Maybe we spent a bit more time on Mayo there, but I really like the look of the Galway team. If they played Sice as a full time sweeper, maybe in front of that full back line, kept the shape of their midfield and five forwards, I just like them, because if you're putting a sweeper in front of Comer, he can take it right and left. Like, he was a great catch on the end line. He's fearless. I've said this before, I'm a huge Damien Comer fan. He's a battler to hit. On who did he hit towards the end?
Dermot O'Connor.
Oh my god, and then celebrated the hit. Damien Comer is a bad fella you want on your team.
Absolutely, yeah.
You know, he's a monster of a man. And like, when you look down at that forward line and you see Shane Walsh and you see Comer, you see Armstrong on the freeze, you see Paul Conroy kind of, you know, played a leadership role in a gesture, did everything right, got on the ball, which you'd want from him. You see a lot of pluses on this Galway team. Daly's only young, he'll only get better as well. So, you know,
he's a lovely style about him as well.
It's just a matter of time whether this lad starts producing.
He absolutely has it, because the sign of a real good player, the longer he has the ball, the more time he has on it.
Yeah, now come here, we want to talk about Monaghan Cavan, and we don't have much time for this because we'll talk about Cavan.
Of course we don't have much time for the Ulster game.
I tell you one thing, Ulster games are getting some coverage in RTE. Every single Ulster game has been shown on RTE.
The best
so
games
far. Would you ever stop? Well, the last two have been good, in fairness to them, but I don't know what deal RTE have with the Ulster Championship, because they've all I think it's because they're getting a free feed from BBC or something. I think that's someone said that to me on Twitter.
Someone said it on Twitter.
Well, it has to be true, so I'm just throwing it out there. We don't know the actual reason for that. We must ask RTE. I want to talk about corner back play, lads, because McMahon has scored the goal, right? And Keane, you can give us an idea of this. My theory on this happened McManus in the first half as well, where he's breaking out for a ball and then he just decides to double back, and Faulkner fell for it hook, line and sinker, and then fell for it in the second half hook, line and sinker. Now, the way I would usually see with a corner back is you mark him from beside, and if he's breaking out, but you always have goal side, you'd always kind of cover in goal side. You're being that little bit conservative. But my question on this now is, because of defensive systems, players are coming out in the loop so much that you actually have to attack that loop ball. So you're a sitting duck for this double back the other way, and you got a hand pass over the top. Twice McManus did it. You do it once and you say, oh, he did it well. You do it twice, and I'm sure they're the only two times he got the ball. I'm sure he's doing this a lot. But a cornerback has to commit to his run as much as possible because he's afraid of this loop and this point kicking on the loop. So they're sitting ducks for this double backwards, and like, the goal was like the perfect example of this.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. It's hard to describe, but it's the sort of thing you would see in a juvenile match. it genuinely is, in terms of how inept the defensive work is. I totally agree with you. It must be something that's being coached into these lads at the minute, but it's such bad defensive play, it's just unbelievable.
Yeah.
How you could take a risk to try and put pressure on a Conor McManus shot, which he's going to get off anyway, you know, to let him in behind you for a goal is just absolute madness.
But Keane, just on that, you're not trying to break out in front of him here for a kick pass from midfield. These are hand passes.
I know, it's crazy.
Like, that is very, very naive.
It's kamikaze stuff. And really, what you always have to say, good defensive players are, you spot the danger. And the better defenders spot the danger quickest, and they make the right decision. So if it's a 2-on-1, they back off and they concede the point. They make the forwards mind up for him by letting him kick the score, rather than lunging out at him. He just slips by and it's in for a goal. You're going, what are you doing there? So this was another scenario where it's a decision to be made by the defender. I'm marking Conor McManus. Conor McManus, for this entire game, cannot get inside me. Now, sometimes I've played against loads of defenders where if the hardest lads to get to do real damage against, they let you kick points. They let you kick 2 or 3 points and they just give you no option to get past them. So they maybe stand that yard off you because they're thinking, there's no point in getting too tight to this lad, because if I get too tight to him, he has goal in his mind, he wants to get inside and get in for goal. So I'll stand the yard off him and I'll make him kick under a bit of pressure. And if he's able to kick points under pressure from difficult angles, well then, fair enough, because he's going to score anyway. He's the best forward on the team. So it's just weighing that up from a defender's perspective. That was a bad decision twice by the Cavan cornerback yesterday, but I would say I wouldn't entirely blame him for the goal, because Conor Moynagh's attempt,
horrific,
as the last defender was embarrassing.
Yeah.
Listen, I can't tackle. I would be embarrassed if that was me.
He rushed straight out at him. He rushed towards a player rushing at him at pace. There's no logic to it. Like, you meant to back off in that scenario.
I really don't understand it. Like, in such a big, big game, a pivotal moment of the game, you're winning the match. Like, you're one of the leaders of your team. You're the centre of the defence. I can't believe it. I cannot believe that he did what he did. I'm sure he's kicking himself, because, I mean, that was the scenario there where, you know, Sean Kavanagh would not have let McManus buy him as easy, shall we say.
And but you'd even, come round, Kim.
But even if he stood his ground, lads, with his hands out, Conor McManus has a difficult decision to make there. He has to throw a sidestep and completely throw himself up. He rushed towards him. McManus didn't really have to do anything, like, just a shrug.
In wet conditions, it's the cardinal sin for a defender to lunge in. If you stand up strong, he wouldn't have even if he had got a strong hand on McManus probably would have spilled the ball.
Yeah,
that's all it would have taken, and there were defenders coming back. If he spills the ball, even the keeper can get out and clear it for him. It was just such poor play, but you would say McManus read the situation really well. It was a brilliant piece of movement from him. Defender fell for it. Little sidestep inside Moynagh, and he finished it really, really well. And that was the turning point in the whole game, because Cavan were well in it up to that point.
Maybe I like forwards more than you two. Maybe I'm more pure because I'm from Ulster. I thought McManus sort of had those boys on a string a little bit. Is there a point there where he's going out so far that the defender naturally switches off a little bit and thinks he's actually not in this move anymore because the ball's getting ahead of him? But then bang, McManus was away then.
He was running towards the man. Like, yeah, he was looking for a hand pass both times.
But
so
then there's a little
interested
part there where it's like, right, is this gone too far where it's not going to come to him anymore? Because I'm pretty close to him anyway. If the guy fist passes him this ball, he's going to be under serious pressure. Yeah. I don't think he will. Naturally switch off.
All I can say is, from playing inter-county at full forward a lot, I've tried that move a lot. You shouldn't be getting goals doing that. Like, that's basic movement. Like, all you're doing is pretending to run forward and doubling back. That should not be that easy to get inside for a goal there. Like, you know what I mean? Like, if it was that easy, we'd all be doing
it. It's better for the likes of me. What about the second one then? I was surprised when I saw it was Moynagh. I was like, Jesus. But then he sort of draws him in a little bit where he doesn't have the ball fully under control. It's still coming up on his left hand. And I think Moynagh takes that as an invitation
maybe
to go for the ball.
Yeah, I'll give you that one. Maybe that's the only excuse for Moynagh.
No excuse. No, absolutely none. No excuse. I wouldn't even give myself an excuse there. No chance.
Yeah, no. And okay, listen, we'll leave the two of you at that. Who do you call him? Owen Duffy, lads. I don't know, where is this lad's after coming out of? Like, I mean, he's just a bit part player, but he's kicking points from all angles now and looks a really good player. I think he scored 4 from play. He obviously set up McManus's goal, and he's everything good about it. And interestingly, Jack McCarron, who seems to have lost his touch altogether, he hasn't played well since that brilliant Dublin game against Fermanagh. He was all over the place. 3 really bad wides from a fella who lives off accuracy. Like, I mean, that's like something I would do playing in there, but at least I'd be out in front and making things happen. So you'll take the few wides as this is just a, you know, you'll take the good with the bad. McCarron's a finisher. That's not what he's there for, wides. But like, I mean, you know, that's another story. But Owen Duffy played on a little bit in front of the two lads, which is what we talked about after the Fermanagh game, that not having that fella in front. And now Fermanagh, or now Monaghan, even though that might not have been their plan all along, having Duffy in there, who's not, who can score as a little bit of danger in front of the lads and a link man, just exactly what they needed.
And when Conor McCarthy came on as well, he was brilliant at it. And again, you'd be advocating for him to start, really, from watching Monaghan. He's an excellent player. And having him and Duffy, who are capable of getting scores, along with McManus and McCarron, gives them that. And they put the work in as well. It's not like they're hanging up there. Duffy is getting up and down the field.
Duffy's a hard worker, yeah, but it's that presence in the half forward line. And if I, like Keane says, those two lads there in the half forward line, you still have your Dugan, you still have the other corner forward or wing forward, Malone. So Dugan, Malone back, you have your two midfielders back. There's a good, with the defenders Monaghan have, outstanding. You know what I mean? Hopefully Drew Wiley's okay. He went off injured. They're outstanding. 4 fellas helping them, I think, is enough. That you don't need to distort your forward line all that much.
And those 4 players that Keane mentioned, McCarron, McManus, Duffy and McCarthy, like, between them scored 1-9. So all of a sudden it doesn't matter if McCarron only gets a point in a game and has a bad day shooting. They got 1-9 from play, sorry, between the four of those guys. So there's some sort of system in place here where, like, they are finding these boys and they're finding them consistently. And then Darren Hughes comes on in the full forward late in the second half. I mean, I think Monaghan are really coming here.
Yeah, yeah, I'm glad I tipped them for Ulster. It was great to see Darren Hughes back as well. He's obviously back before was expected. That was great. As we've gone way over time, we're at 27 minutes there, so we'll be back in a second with performance of the weekend.
Is the little dink fist pass from a crowded area into that D we're at home about, where Bernard, I've talked to Bernard about, Bernard's very patient, but this little dink ball, you know, the one in a crowded area where it's a fist pass, the weight is taken over, hits the ground and it bounces into a fella's chest, and there's consternation then in around the D and in around that area. Watch for this in the semis and the final. Do you know the one I'm talking about? That little fisted ball that's just bounced in a crowded area, but it gets to the
yeah,
body.
You have said it three times.
It's in around, but you're looking at me, you're looking
well,
at
out
me
of a crowded area, isn't
you're
it?
You're looking at me with such a confused head in you. It's like I was talking about you trying to get a point in coppers or something there in a crowded area. Yeah, watch for it.
Performance of the weekend, lads. I think there's plenty of options of fellas that have played well. Whether the outstanding performances, unbelievable, obvious performances are there, I'm not too sure. I want to give a shout out to Damien Comer, lads, because obviously I'm on record saying I'm a huge fan of his. Unfortunately, Galway are on a media ban after yesterday, which is very disappointing, because I was on to Damien and I was trying to get Kevin Walsh and they're not talking to the media. Maybe they want to keep the heads down and not be singing about it, but, like, I mean, I suppose on the Monday you'd like to hear from them. But anyways, that's neither here nor there. One thing I wanted to talk about, lads, with Damien Comer was the Galway's moves from the throw-in. So both throw-ins, Conroy knocked to Conroy wins it, and immediately he's shifting it off to Comer. Now, what I would love to see there, and what you always losing out in the Sunday game because they don't know analysis, I'd love to see a camera angle behind the goals and see the movement of the Galway forwards to get Comer free. Because there's no way. The first one, Comer was 6 or 7 yards ahead of McCaffrey. Now, I want to see Comer's movement to get free for that, because that's a planned move.
Yeah.
That is Conroy to Comer, and Comer's shooting, and we're getting an early point, and it's Comer who's an inspirational type fella.
Yeah.
And that's, like, that's all spoken about in the Galway dressing room. It's worked on the training field. But what I would love to see, is there a block move involved, which there often is with these kind of things? You know, how are they releasing? Are the other players scattering out of Comer's way to give him all that area?
Well, definitely the centre half forward position was vacated on both occasions.
Yes.
So whoever was playing at centre forward hit the wing, and everyone else was maybe holding their positions to create that space. So Comer has a massive pocket. Comer's such a powerful man, and he's quick as well. I would say it's probably not too. I'd say Comer just turned big, pushing chest on Caffrey, and gone.
Keen, even to show that.
Yeah,
do you know what I mean? But that's analysis, and that's stuff that people that haven't been in dressing rooms might not know about set moves. When we were with Liam Cairns, we had set moves. Now, they rarely came off. But how I found them great was the confidence they gave me, knowing we had a plan or two up our sleeves. And even if they never came off, I said, "That's great that we have this. We've never had it before."
Yeah.
But we used to have this set move from the throw-in, and it was for me or the other wing forward, me or Ross probably. And it was basically everyone on the full forward line is breaking out for the ball, and I'm breaking across the field and then in. So I'm in, end up in the full forward line, and I think in one league game it might have come off, and the feeling of that coming off, that you were on that
Ross.
What?
I hope it went to Ross.
Yeah, or else it was going wide.
Well, we must all have the same one, because we had something similar with Kyler, and it worked twice in the same match in the first round of the championship against Kildare, to start of the first half, start of the second half, and it was basically that. Yeah, your full forward line starting position was slightly further than normal.
Yeah.
It was probably outside the 21. When the ball was thrown up, three lads in the full forward line just tore straight out the pitch as it was won. Half forward line in, one of the half forwards in over the top. It was Pather Byrne, because he was the paciest, in over the top, kicked 2 points.
Yeah.
You know, and it gets you, it also tunes in your team as well. You're
tunes
very focused.
Yeah.
Everybody knows their job and you just get on with it.
And one of those points that comes off something that's been planned is worth 2 points. It just goes, lads, we said this at work, it's working, and everyone looks at each other and it's like, yes, we, you know what I mean? We have this. Another good one was from sideline balls. You know, I always think you see a fella on the 45 with a sideline ball. It's a bit far out for going for a point, and it's like standing there and they're looking and they're like, it's like, Jesus, have you not something planned for this? Like, I mean, we used to do a thing where, like, it's not rocket science, but everyone would break that side of field and a midfielder's going the far side and it's gone diagonal to the midfielder. Why do we not see things like this? Are these being worked on at all? I would say in a lot of squads not being worked on, but I would also say maybe
with defensive systems, maybe the, you know, there's too many men on both sides for one like that now, for example. Maybe the days of that one are gone.
Yeah,
but at the same time,
it's very rare. Like, you wouldn't have too many of them. I know we had another one where we used Joe, so I would come out for, say, a long range free, and it would be a case that pretty much everybody would try and clear out and leave Joe inside, and I just float the ball, because obviously if it's coming in off the ground, it's much easier to take. And Joe was such a handful in the air that if you could create enough space that he was only fighting with one man for the ball, guaranteed he was going to win it. And it was amazing. Like, it generally worked. Like,
right,
you know, it did work. I remember the first round of the championship against Offaly, Joe caught the ball and stuck it in the net, and the referee for some reason gave a free out. I don't know what it was for, but you know, again, these sorts of things, they just in a game, sometimes it can just re-trigger you back into focus. It can just be small things like that, and if you have them set up and they work, it's a huge advantage to you. Advantage.
No, it is, and that's why the likes of the Sunday game really disappoints me. There's so many little things with a camera behind the goal that you can show people, and they never do. It's usually just replays of scores and it's general talking points about team. But show us something from your experience of being on squad, because the Comer thing was very obvious. It was very obvious.
Yeah,
you know, now maybe when you see that camera angle behind, nothing really that much happened. But even like, show Comer pushing, like you said.
But everybody on the team knows that this ball is going to Comer. So all the other forwards know. Get the hell out of his
make
way.
Make yourself scarce. Make yourself scarce, and that's it. Who else were we going to give this to, lads? Because not too much. James O'Donoghue, lads, 9 points in total, 4 from play, and I saw a point from James O'Donoghue I've never seen from him before, one off the outside of his boot. He's not a man for the outside of the boot, and I was raging. I texted him last night. James is swerving me for some reason now. He's not even. He doesn't even say no now. He just reads the text and doesn't reply back. So
the double blue tick, is that what you're getting?
Double blue tick with no reply. Yeah. So that's the way it works. So I wanted to slag him off about his first ever score off the outside of his boot, which it probably was, because he's so lethal from the inside off both feet that the one off the outside came as a surprise. But back. Tipped him for player of the year. Lads, I'm on a roll today. My Galway one's looking good. My Monaghan for the Ulster's looking good. I've never felt better in my life. James O'Donoghue, player of the year, I pulled out in the preview. And he's off to a great start. Let's be honest, he's going to run amok against Cork.
He is.
And he's in an All-Ireland quarter-final and a nice handy one. Jeez, he could have been sewed up by then. You know what I mean? If he stays injury-free. I saw him saying, once you get the body right and get the head right, the football will come and I should be in a good place. And like, when you hear James O'Donoghue talking, he's a breath of fresh air, and that you can just, if I was to give you that kind of quote, you'd nearly guess he said it, because he's that kind of cheeky, cocky attitude. Once my body's right and I've my head right, the foot, mate, come on lads, the football's there. You all know the football's there. Like, that goes without saying. So like, he's great to hear from. Nomination each, lads, before, because we're going way over time.
I went for Rory Began from Monaghan, the goalkeeper. I thought it was just a complete performance. His kickout, he just kept finding Kieran Hughes religiously from his kickouts. He went short, he went long. There's one who went over the top, I think the centre half forward, the whole way to the 45, Cavan's 45. And he scored 3 points as well himself. He carries the ball out when he has to. 2 big 45s. Thought he was super.
He was.
And like, particularly when the game was in the balance. Yeah, like when the game was right there when he was kicking those scores. So they were a pressure kick, so it was very impressive. There was nobody really, to me, was what I would call outstanding this weekend. I mean, James O'Donoghue was very, very impressive. He was probably from an individual scoring feat, that was fairly impressive. Carl O'Connell was caught the eye, particularly with his block in the first half against Cavan, which was potentially a crucial moment in the game. Unbelievable. It was reminiscent of was a Conor Gormley's block on Stevie in the All-Ireland final, coming from the blind side, and a brilliant block. And I think he might have got a belt in the head for his trouble as well. But he's huge energy around the field, and he's been a brilliant, brilliant player for Monaghan. And that just typifies the sort of stuff and the sort of selflessness for the team, you know, getting back, and he's still making those driving runs forward and back there making a crucial tackle. So I was very impressed with him.
Yeah, no, me too. But the winner of performance of the weekend, you'd have to give it to James O'Donoghue. Great to see him back. And obviously, like Tomás O'Shea said last night, there was maybe too much focus on Paul Geaney, but even the league final against Dublin, I thought at the start of the game they were just looking for him way too much, and it was becoming too obvious. Now to have James in beside him, who's arguably a better player, if not a completely different type of player, and a beautiful balance. So performance of the weekend is James O'Donoghue. And we do have to remind the winners of the weekend that they get a mug. We haven't got the mugs left yet, so I'm going to have to do a list of our performance
of the
weekend.
Only if they take the call, Molly.
Well, yeah, no, I never thought about that.
If you're on a media ban, you don't get the mug.
No, or even if they don't don't reply to the text. So James, unless I get a reply to that text, I saw the two blue ticks, you're not getting no mug, buddy. You can drink your coffee out of your own mug. Right, okay, we'll talk to you on Thursday. Good luck.
I'm not finished yet. It took me a long time to get here.
Both parents have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
That these fellas will get such a f***ing shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their f***ing asses for f***ing 10 years.
The GAA Hour with Colin Parkinson is sponsored by AIB, proudly backing club and county.